And welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to Rosie on the House. I grabbed one of my neighbors and dragged him into the studio today, and I'm going to tell you why I did that. We've lived in the same home.
You're never going to be able to disclose your neighborhood.
We have lived in the same home for a long time. And Jennifer has, you know, I'm a builder, been a builder my whole life. Jennifer has only ever lived in one home I built.
And it's in that same neighborhood, right?
And it's in that same neighborhood. But I've been dreaming about this perfect home that I'm going to find the perfect lot for, and I'm going to build it. And as I'm dreaming about this, I'm taking notes, and I'm stuffing the notes into a folder, and I'm just thinking about all the kind of the lighting that I want and the site orientation that I want and the materials that are going to be used. And in the process of all this, about a couple years ago, this project started in our neighborhood that I saw every morning when I went to work and every afternoon when I came home. And the more I watched this project, the more I realized they're building my perfect house. That's my house they're building right there. And it was, Romy, it was an absolute masterful operation to watch. You could go by the job site morning, noon, or night. There was never disorder. The trucks were always parked in the right place. There was never piles of debris blowing all across the neighborhood. There was work getting done every single day. The work that was getting done, the fit and the finish were absolutely impeccable. And every day I drove by, I just fell in love with this house as it grew before my eyes. I thought, wow, whoever putting this up, I've got to meet them.
You know, as a builder or anyone in the building trades that takes pride in their work, you always like to think, man, no one takes as much time as me. No one does this as good. You know, I'm on the job 10 minutes extra just to make sure it's right. Watching that house go up, I kept thinking, that guy might be better than me.
You start
questioning, like, wow.
The job site was always clean. The workmanship was always great. There were never empty days. It was like watching a fine orchestra perform a beautiful opera. I mean, it really was. I was just so. The family moves in the house, and I'm trying to get up the courage to go knock on their door. And as I'm coming down the street one day, the lady of the house is bringing out her trash can. So in my big F-250, I thought, I'm very compulsive. I slammed on the brakes. I pulled in her driveway and said, I love your house. May I introduce myself? And that was sweet Mrs. Bittinger. And we brought Jerry into studio today because I want you to share with all of our listening audience what went in the building of this home. If you're interested, you could see it in our article today in the Arizona Republic. Jerry, just talk a little bit. Let me introduce you to about 100,000 Arizona homeowners that are tuning in right now, and they want to know, how did you build Rosie's perfect house?
Well, first of all, Rosie, thank you very much for having me on your program and for allowing me to make my radio debut.
Very good. It'll be easy.
In my retirement.
In your retirement.
Well, Rosie, I'd retired. We'd moved out from the East Coast to Utah and lived there for about 9 years. And I liked it a lot. We built a house there. We remodeled several homes. And I, in my career, had worked as a lawyer on several very large international construction projects. So I had some idea of what should go into planning for a home or for any building. I didn't do that kind of planning in our first home we built in Utah because I was working full time on the East Coast. And so much of the planning was done on the fly during the construction process. And while we liked the home we built, it just didn't quite fit the needs we had, and it didn't have the attention to the minimization of maintenance that I think is important for every homeowner, but particularly as you retire and you enter into what should be your golden years, not your repairing years.
That's right. And y'all moved, basically, if I remember right, from New York City to very rural Utah.
Very well. We went from New York to Washington, D.C., and then to very, very rural Utah.
Now, y'all were like 30 miles from the nearest grocery store, right?
30 miles from the nearest grocery store, 100 miles from the nearest mall, and 170 miles from the car dealer. So there were difficulties there, but we enjoyed it for a period of time. But I looked around and we wanted a place that was warm in the winter, that was a livable urban environment and had a good international airport. And the Phoenix area really fits that bill.
It does.
It is a livable urban environment, and I really like it. Well, I guess I should talk about the planning process. When we start, before we started to build the house, I told my wife, we're going to have to plan this out very carefully, what we want, how we're going to use each room, the kinds of things we're going to do in the house, and how to minimize all of the maintenance and the work that goes into living in a home. The home should be a place that enhances your life, not takes time out that you would prefer to give somewhere else.
Amen, brother.
So what
you're preaching to the choir. You're preaching to the choir.
So what we did, and first that was a bit of rebellion on her part, but she settled into it. We ended up with 11 single-spaced pages of instructions, criteria, descriptions, whatever you want to call it, of the things, what we needed for our home. So, for example, we grow a lot of sprouts. My wife eats a vegan, largely raw diet. I am close to hers, except I have a meat meal fairly frequently. But we eat a very fairly strict diet. And we have a room in the house where we are able to grow sprouts and do the kind of work that's necessary to sustain that lifestyle. So I started out with her. I said, all right, we go to a grocery store and we buy 25 pounds of buckwheat groats. Or you don't have to know what it is, but it's something we eat. What do you do with it? You put it in the car and you drive home. You put it in the garage. Then what do you do with it? You take it out and you have to store it somewhere. Then you have to go through a cleaning process, then a sprouting process, and then a dehydrating process. We built the house so that the distance from the car to the room in which all that work is done is very small, maybe 20 feet. And in that room is a place to store it, and all the work that needs to be done on that particular thing that we're going to eat is done in one room so that you're no more than two steps from any one of the processes you have to take. When it's done, you then take it to the dining room and you can eat it, but you have a place to store it in that room. So there's no excess motion. So,
and that's the kind of planning that went into one aspect of this home. How long did it take you to put together 11 pages of criteria?
It took us a couple of months.
I bet it did. And that had to be some pretty concentrated effort.
It was. We would sit and go through it step by step. And that was one aspect. We did the same for there are sprouts that we grow using earth. Where do we buy the earth? Where do we store it? All those steps so that all the work was minimized.
It's a neat growing room. It's got its own ventilation system and drainage system and watering system, and it's connected to the kitchen.
It is. There's just a sliding door between them, and you can open it and use it as one room or close it off, because in there we have dehydrators, and you can close it off to minimize the sound. I should emphasize that all these rooms, internal rooms, are insulated against the other internal rooms.
That's great for sound.
Which is very rare.
I think the architect said it was rare.
Yeah.
The builder said it was rare.
Yeah.
But I said, this is what we need to do in order to minimize sound and to keep the temperatures separate from, say, a growing room and a kitchen or a dining room or living room.
Well, once you put this criteria together, and it's obvious low maintenance was had to be very high on that list.
That's right. No wood on the exterior of the house.
I don't think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think I saw one painted thing on the outside of the house.
That's right. I think the metal roof is some kind of
powder
coating.
Coated. It's powder coated. And it's guaranteed for 50 years.
The front door is stainless steel.
Yeah. No wood trim. The metal roof is a complete eave wrap, so there's no exposed fascia board, no rafter tail ends.
That's right. The windows are metal.
Yeah.
There are a lot of glass blocks. As if anybody gets the newspaper, they'll see the picture of the front of the home. A lot of glass blocks.
And last hour, we had a caller wanting to replace a bathroom window with glass block, and we said it has to be done right. This glass block, if you're picturing a home, we've got masonry up to about, 7 feet?
It's a little higher than that.
A little higher. Yeah. And then the glass block is above that, and the eave comes over. So the direct sunlight isn't on the block, but the ambient light of the sun allows for all this light to pour into the home.
You're absolutely right.
I saw that, and I thought, brilliant.
There is a 4-foot overhang all the way around the house. So you don't get either the direct sunlight bearing down on you, fading your furniture and heating the house. But you get a lot of light.
A lot of light. Yeah, and the other thing about, you want to break right now? Let's go to quick break, and then when I come back, we want to start talking about the more of the criteria, not only in the material selection, but in the way it all got put together and how you did your contractor selection, because that's where most people don't put the planning into it, and then they pick the wrong guy, and you beat both those odds. So I want you to share your tactics with everybody.
Very good.